Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Dustin Roderick.
Hi, Dustin.
Hey. Hi. How's it going?
Thank you so much for joining us. Can we kick it off by asking you to introduce yourself to our listeners, and can you give us a background on how you got into photography?
Yeah. Hello. My name is Dustin.
Hello.
Hi.
Dustin Roderick on all the socials. But I'm from Colorado. I got into photography. Oh, man. What year was it? Probably 2007, 2008, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Just kind of on a whim, my friends were really into skateboarding and like I wasn't very good, but wanted to still be around. And so picked up a camera so that I could still be invited and got kind of sucked into the world from there. I grew up in a small town in Colorado called Montrose. Let's see, when did I leave? I left Montrose like 2006. I went to Denver, lived in Denver for about 10 years. When I moved to Denver, that was kind of when I got really into photography and tried to go to the Art Institute for photography there. It's now a closed school, so they apparently didn't make it, but I went for a semester and I got kind of sucked in, and that's when photography really changed for me. So I did a photo history class and I learned about Gary Winogrand, was really actually the big one, but street photography in general. So I learned about Gary Winogrand. We had a class assignment where we had to go out and do street photography, and I did so awful. Looking back now, it's like I did all the tropes, all the things you're not really supposed to do, like photographing homeless people and things like that. Now I look back and I'm like, what was I doing? But you know, I didn't know the ethics of it at the time, and it was just a new thing. And that's like kind of what kickstarted a deeper passion for photography, was going to school there. I only went for about a semester because a year. Because a lot of the program was about getting into studio and portraiture and like, you know, how you make money, I guess, as a photographer for a lot of people. And I got so drawn into the street photography thing, that I kind of was like, I don't think I want to do the rest of it.
Wow.
Let's see, fast forward a little bit. Life kind of caught me a little bit. It was working a lot. And then fast forward, I lived in Denver for about 10 years, ended up getting married, had a kiddo. And when our kiddo turned 2, we ended up moving to New York. And part of that move to New York was just we both wanted to be in a bigger city and whatever. But there was definitely something lingering in the back of my mind, like that's like a street photography mecca, you know, like
that's where you need to be.
Moved to New York and been here for about 9 years, and it's been great. I've been, you know, still doing photography as much as I can.
It's crazy to just like, let's move to New York.
You know, look, definitely looking back on it, I'm like, how did we do it? Like,
yeah,
we were like, let's move to New York. We owned a house in Denver.
Wow.
I found a job and like, I was like, all right, I'm going to go out and work and you can deal with the house. Cause it was kind of like, I needed to be out here. Like they were like, you can have this job, but you gotta be here in 2 weeks. And it was like, okay. So we decided that it was worth trying. And so we made that decision, but you know, my wife and a bunch of my friends kind of helped her pack up the house. We sold the house. We moved out here. All with a 2-year-old, like, I don't know what. Like, if I was to do that again now, like, I don't think
I'd
be able to do it. But at the time, we just went for it.
I love that. I love that. I mean, that's how when I picked up and moved to Tennessee, it was like that too. It's just like, it's time for something new. I mean, I wasn't taking a 2-year-old and a wife and a house and all that, but a little easier for me. But I mean, we only get one of these things called life. So you got to really like grab it by the horns and just go for it.
I was going to say, like, it comes at you fast, and they're not kidding, you know.
Is photography your full time gig, or is it just kind of like your side? It's not a side. I mean, it's more important than a side project.
Yeah.
Just like a passion kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always, you know, there was times where I really wanted to make photography my job and make money at it and get a lot of gigs and do that whole thing, especially, you know, moving to New York and making friends that were shooting for New York Times and for the New Yorker and all these really cool publications. There was a big part of me that, like, you know, I was feeling a little jealous maybe, or like wanting to get into that world. I ended up doing a couple of shoots for editorial publication stuff, and I hated the pressure. It was just not for me. I kind of had decided that photography was going to be something I'd do for fun or for enjoyment. I think once you bring money into it, it just doesn't work. I think the pressure that I put on myself, the kind of pressure of competing with your friends of getting jobs, because definitely a real thing here.
Totally.
It just became this thing that I wanted to keep it for me. I wanted to keep it fun. And it's definitely kind of maintained its passion project status. Would I say yes to jobs? I mean, I've done weddings. I've done some editorial stuff. I've done fashion stuff. When I first moved to New York, one of the jobs that I had was doing some fashion stuff for a menswear brand. And it's just not for me. I'd rather keep it something that I do for fun, keep that passion alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Avoid the pressure.
I think that's a big misconception with the whole street photography or photography thing in the first place. I think people think that you're making like buku dollars out of catching, like, you know, somebody eating a hot dog or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty crazy because I mean, I'm right there with you, Chris. You come on a different side of this. Yeah. You are a professional photographer. You are on sets. You are on. And first, like, somehow, just from talking to you for years, like, this doesn't kill your passion of photography. But I felt the same way as you, Dustin. Like, I was just terrified. And I knew I could do the work. I knew I had the eye to do jobs and stuff like that. But there's when you put the pressure and the weight of the responsibility of getting the shot, like, you have to get the shot. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ball game. Like, I'm not built that way. So
I don't know that I am either, but here I'm I do it anyway. So
nah, you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it can definitely be fun. And I have friends who work on cool jobs. I think that sometimes the cool jobs are few and far between.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, quote unquote cool. But I think it's there's something special when you can do what you love for money. As long as you're able to, like you said, be able to keep that passion alive. I think that that's really the crux of it all. Like, I think that's really important, because once you start losing passion for it, it's like, well, then go get a 9-to-5 doing something else. Yeah. Like, if you're not even wanting to make your own work as well. So
I feel like for me, there's like, you can transition. Like, I shot weddings for years and was sort of getting burnt out, but there's like aspects of the weddings that I like, the booking and the editing and the bookmaking and all this stuff, like, after the fact wasn't always fun.
Yeah.
Some of it is, though, like having like a final product of like photos that you made for people in love and stuff like that. There's finding like the little gems of like, oh, this is the part. Like, this is the part I love, you know? And if that can sustain, you know, all the other stuff, you just have to balance it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I've shot weddings that, you know, I enjoyed. There was definitely some aspects. I actually enjoy second shooting weddings because I feel there's less pressure and I can kind of just roam around and like get candid photos of people. Yeah, I think that there's definitely some aspects of especially wedding photography that I would enjoy. But I think that, what you said is really important. It's like finding the avenues to find that enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some of it might feel more like work. And I think that's always going to be the case. Even going to, you know, I've been doing a lot of like more project-based work.
Yeah.
And that is, it's fun. Like there's elements of it that I find that are really fun to do. And then there's a lot of it that I don't find fun. But they're all part of the bigger process and all part of this bigger thing that you kind of have to, you kind of have to do some of it. You can't just do the fun stuff all the time.
That is true. It's funny because I when I talk to people about taking photos and they don't understand why, well, no, I shouldn't say the people that I'm talking to, but say you're taking a photo of somebody's driveway and there's a cool car or something and you're the guy like creepily standing there with your camera taking a picture of it. Some people don't comprehend that like where the art is in that, mm-hmm. you know, like it's so weird to explain that to somebody. And I just looking at your work, not that you're taking like, you know, bland pictures of things, but I see the pictures of trees and the yard and you know, it's just, there's a side of that, that every couple months I'm looking at my work and I'm like, why am I, who is interested in this? And I'm like, oh wait, I am, like, I enjoy this. This is the part that I'm finally breaking myself. 'Cause it's been years since I've took social media, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. There was a point where I was like really running with it. I was like, I'm want to be Instagram famous, or not famous, but I want to be known. I want my photos to be popular. And, you know, and then when I finally cut the cord on that idea and started just the freedom that comes along with grabbing my camera, walking out the door, just doing what I do. And, but it's so funny talking to people. Like I was talking to this girl that takes piano lessons at the store I work at, and it was just, well, she's like, what kind of stuff do you take photos of? Do you do like product photography, wedding photography? I'm like, trash cans, mailboxes, pretty trees, an occasional this, you know, like it's, I try to explain it and they're like, they just, you see the look, like, I don't get it. How is that art?
It's
how
art,
is that?
Man, it's art.
You know, like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was really going with all that, but
no, I mean, I resonate with a lot of that. It's a lot of what I'm interested in lately. You know, I still go out and take the street photos every now and then, but I'm actually a lot more drawn to the quote unquote boring photos nowadays. I think when a photo is less obvious in what it's trying to say, I find it more interesting in trying to figure out what it's trying to say. Does that make sense? Like
100%.
I think when a photo is like, I kind of, the description I would give it is like a one-liner. I think street photography in general has a lot of one-liner photography where it's like, oh, wow, look, it's the thing. It's the very obvious photo of this thing, whether it's a, you know, interesting person, you know, a gesture, like there, it's like can be sometimes very, very obvious. And I still like that photography a lot, but I've found that I'm getting more interested in photography that's less obvious because it makes me really, first of all, it makes me look at it more because I'm like, why did we take this photo? You know? And so I was actually talking to someone about this recently where I think that photographers and artists in general should be asking the question why more than how. Like, how did you get this photo? It's like, why did you take this photo?
Okay.
I think is a much more interesting question. At least right now, that's what's interesting to me. And I think that makes sense, you know, taking a picture of a car and someone's driving, like it's, you're never going to be able to describe it to someone who doesn't get it. Or you can try, but I empathize. I've been in those situations, even with family, you know, family back home in Colorado, they're like, so you made a photo book about trees. And I'm like, well, I'll leave it there. Sure. If that's what it is to you. But then I start talking about them a little bit, talking about it a little bit more. And they're like, oh, that's interesting. But
Yeah. It's just funny. I was laughing at myself the other day. They're working on the stadium, the high school football stadium here. And there was just a fence. They had a fence up and like there was angles. And it's just like where your mind thinks. It's like if I shoot it from this way, get the fence kind of going over there. It's just like when your mind starts going. And again, I'm going, who's going to appreciate this photo? Oh, wait, I am. Like, that's why I'm doing this. I keep forgetting the small little recipe of, like, I'm doing this for me. Like, I'm not doing it for anybody else type thing. So it's weird.
Yeah. I think that I can find myself questioning that as well. Like, why am I taking this photo? Well, because I like it or because it's interesting to me. But am I just taking it for myself? Do I plan on sharing that? And like, that can be a snowball, you know, like that can really kind of stir up a lot of things, because I think photography is meant to be shared. But as you know, and we all know, like, the hit rate for a lot of photographers is pretty low. So like, we're all taking photos that are never going to really be seen. But I think the goal is to create something. What is that quote that, like, Gary Winogrand said? It's like, you find something that interests you, you take a bunch of photos of it, and you print. I should look up that quote, but it's something along the lines of, like, you either got what you saw or you got something better, and you print whichever one is best, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. You got to just follow that instinct. You got to just try it. And I think first and foremost, it does come from what interests you, you know? And so if it interests you, you got to take the photo.
I wanted to talk to you about, it seems like your daughter is one of your, like, a good muse for you, if I had to guess by your website. That's kind of where I am at in my life too. My work has kind of shifted where I'm just photographing my kiddos and family stuff and finding those moments. How do you think that's changed you as a photographer? The way it's changed me is, like, it's just them, you know?
I mean, that was a big reason why I got the camera out again, was when she was born. I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, get the camera back out because I need to. And then that sparked a whole bunch of other, like, I want to take photos of this and this and this. But that was like the beginning again of me getting a camera. And like, really, I made a plan when she was first born. I was like, okay, I'm going to get a camera and I'm going to shoot pretty much everything in black and white for her.
Yeah.
At the time I was really into color, but I was like, I'm going to shoot just black and white and have all these photos of her in black and white. Yeah, and that's kind of what started that, but it's changed a lot as she's gotten older. Mm-hmm. She just turned 9, and she's much more aware of who she is,
right?
And her body and, like, her image and what she wants to be shown. And I don't know, she's a lot more camera shy, and she's telling me no a lot more. And I'm in this weird ethical position of, like, I'm a dad.
Yeah.
Obviously I want to listen to her, but also, like, she doesn't always know what's best for her.
Right.
And maybe this is something she'd want to look back on.
Right.
But also, I don't know, it's like become this whole weird thing where we have this. So I've kind of laid back a little bit with photography of her, but not all the way. And it definitely has changed me a lot in the sense of, I think when I started photographing her and posting some of those photos, you know, I took some photos to a photo retreat called Chico Review. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
So I took a bunch of photos out there, and it was really interesting because I just wanted to kind of get some feedback. I never really thought of these photos as being something I shared. And I got, like, really positive feedback about it. And that kind of helped me switch my mind from, like, street photography 100% to, like, oh, there's, like, some other avenues of photography here that maybe I'm not really exploring deep enough. And that kind of started me on this whole portraits of people and kind of these quieter moments. So that's definitely how it helped morph me. But I'm curious what it's meant for you.
Well, thank you for asking. I don't know if this is, like, postpartum, but I went through, like, I'm still going through it where it's like, it's all happening so fast. Like, I want to get every single moment all the time, you know, and I'm grateful for the iPhone because we can get all these moments, like, so quickly. I can just pull it out of my pocket all the time and grab it. But I'm also, you know, I shoot film and I want to document it in a different way than the phone. So I even, like, you know, hope to make a book someday of just, like, all the little moments of, you know, like the quiet moments that you're talking about, like all the, he's dressed up as Batman or, you know, like all the little, like the, just as memories, but also like to have it to be something that somebody else would want to look at, you know, like you think about like Sally Mann and people, you know, people who've incorporated their family in their work. It's like, I'm just devouring all that kind of work lately. like Deanna Dykeman we had on our show, and she's her family work is like just so impressive, and I'm trying to carve out my little spot with that kind of work. But they're, you know, it's having a kid like changes everything, and like they are my muse. Like they're all I want to photograph, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How old?
They're 3.5 and 18 months. Two boys.
Okay. So you're in like the best years for it.
Yeah.
Once they start getting sassy, it gets so hard. I have to bribe with popsicles and all kinds of stuff all the time.
Yeah. And you know, when they're not in the mood and you're like, if you just stand in this light, the light is so good. And they're, you know, they're making the mean face. You're like, that's not really what I'm going for. Like, oh, well, like, you know, it's tricky at this age too. So I can't wait till they're slamming doors in my face.
Yeah. It's tricky because, you know, at that age, I feel like there's a little bit of attitude, but like, they're still kind of like willing participants most of the time. Mm-hmm. Once I think my daughter reached around age 5, 6, and she kind of was like, no, you know, it was like what are you going to give me? Or I don't want to do this. And especially it was kind of around that time that I was starting to flirt with 4x5 and large format cameras. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I wanted to have like a big body of work, photos of her with the large format camera. Yeah. And I had to like really give up on that fast because it was just not happening.
Yeah.
She'd be doing something. And I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. Like the lights coming through the window grate or it's just an interesting moment. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go get the camera. I used to just leave it set up in my house, just ready to go.
Yeah.
I had like a crazy setup for it because they're pretty slow cameras. So you kind of have to have some light. So I had like this flash setup on it that would like flash the whole room. And it was a whole thing. But I used to have it just ready to go and be like, okay. And I'm like, okay, hold still. And then I'd focus. I'd go to put the sheet film holder thing in to take the photo and she'd move and be like, oh, I have to focus again.
Yeah.
Okay, just go back to that. Like, just hold still. And that's just like this constant battle of trying to get her hold still. And I was just like, okay, maybe this camera isn't the right camera for this.
Not right. Not at that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. How Sally Mann did that.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of all her stuff. I'm like, how did she?
A lot of bribing. A lot of bribing.
Yeah. A lot of popsicles. Yeah. That's all of our secret weapons, popsicles.
Yeah. Even now.
Yeah. I love your video with Polly where you're in the park shooting the 8x10. Are you still shooting large format stuff or?
Yeah. I've really transitioned kind of mostly towards larger formats.
Okay.
Amazing.
I've been doing a lot less 35mm work, if I'm being honest. There's something that I love so much about a 35mm camera, some HP5 or Tri-X or something, and just the freedom that gives you.
Yeah.
But once I started shooting larger formats, I got so addicted to the resolution and the look and the tonality, especially for black and white. There's like this between white and black, the shades and the tonality is just like, it's so addicting. And the larger you go in formats, it's so nice. So yeah, I mean, I think I'm primarily shooting larger formats these days and doing slower work. That's kind of where I see myself heading, especially as I get older. I'm a little bit less interested in walking Midtown for 6 hours at a time. I don't really have the time for that. And I think I'm just more interested in creating something that feels more authentic to me. And right now that just means a little bit slower work and a little bit more thoughtful, less reactive, if that makes sense. So I'm still reacting to what I see in the world. That's kind of my preferred way of making. I'm not so much of a creator where I want to create a photo and I have it all in my head of how I want it to be. And I go out and I find the people and I find the location. It's like, that's not really how it is. I'm still reacting, but I just want that process to be a little bit slower, a little bit more methodical. I think my hit rate goes up when I do that as well, but you know, I'm taking less photos, so that would make sense. Hopefully.
Yeah. So
walk us through what's that process like? Cause it sounds like, does that mean you're like got your 8x10 over your shoulder and you're just walking through Midtown like that and waiting for something to pop up? Or is it?
So we recently moved. We used to live right across the street from Prospect Park.
Okay.
I'm not as close now, but when we lived there, I have a whole project that I made of Prospect Park, and in that walkie-talkie with Paul, kind of like showing the process of what it looks like. I walk around with the 8x10 on my shoulder
amazing.
For at least probably a couple hours, 2-3 hours, walk around with it. And, you know, I'll take breaks here and there, set down the camera. But yeah, I have it set up on the tripod and I just kind of sling the tripod over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I would do that also with a 4x5 though. There's days where like I didn't want to carry around the big, big camera and the 4x5 would be the one that I'd walk around with. But it can all also fit in. I have a backpack that fits an 8x10 with a couple holders. And so, yeah, I would walk around sometimes with it in the backpack and sometimes just have it slung over the shoulder.
Amazing.
And then you're just kind of, yeah, I mean, it's funny that I said as I get older, I like to use the larger formats because in some ways it feels easier, but in a lot of ways it's harder. it's a heavy camera and walking around with it is not that much fun. I think ideally in like a perfect world, you know, I'm actually even just less interested in New York City. Like, I think eventually I'd like to leave and get out to somewhere that hasn't been so explored, if that makes sense, or hasn't been, I don't want to say the word overdone because there's still a lot to be made here. And it's, you know, not trying to throw shade on anyone that loves making work here. But for me, I think that I'm reaching this point where I kind of want to make something that feels really true to who I am. And I don't know if it's here. I think I did that or I have done that. And I think it's time for something different. Ideally, I'd go back to Colorado. I'd like to go and make more work there.
That was going to be my next question. If it seems like your work is shifting, and I was wondering if that was going to mean you were going to leave.
Yeah. Me and my wife have this conversation all the time. I'm completely ready to leave. There is so much about New York City that I love. I will always love. A piece of me will always be here. I mean, I've only been here for 10 years, but I think that's long enough for me to really, you know, feel like it's implanted on me. And I love it here, but I'm ready. I'm ready for something a little bit slower pace of life.
Yeah.
More space and just, yeah, the opportunity to explore something new or different.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm ready to leave, but got to talk my wife into it.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
When we first moved here, she was kind of like, I don't know. And I was like, no, New York is the best. And now we've kind of swapped. And I'm like, I could leave whenever. And she's like, no way, New York is the best. And so we'll see how it goes. But for now, we're here.
It's just, I appreciate kind of circling back to the large format in the park where you start to like... You know, you start to get used to seeing the same people and you see, you know, you take that portrait of that guy that you see, you've taken many portraits. I can't remember what his name was, but when you shoot an area like that, when a park becomes a part of something where you go down, you start to, you know, recognize the characters. And is that something you've made a book out of, or you're planning on making a book out of the Prospect Park work, or do you feel like it's finished? Do you have more to get from there, or what? How's that project going now?
Thank you for asking. So I'll answer your question. It's going to take me a minute.
Yeah, but, no.
So
it's a podcast. Okay.
With that body of work, I applied to a program here in New York called, it's at Penumbra. It's called the Long-Term Photo Book Project or something. LTP. LTP project, LTP. I don't know. It's a year-long program, and the emphasis is on making a body of work into a photo book. By the end of the program, you're to have made a physical book. Actually, technically two. You have to turn one into the school that they put on their like library shelf, and then you keep one for yourself. And so I did this program. It was really cool. It was with Tim Carpenter and Jenya Friedland and a few other people. They run the program, and there's other teachers. All of them were great. And we met up really frequently. I can't remember if it was like twice a month. And they'd bring in guest lecturers. We'd have different assignments to do. And it all was supposed to be with work that we either brought into the program. So for me, it was the Prospect Park work. And also, you could still be making work while in the program, if that makes sense. So it wasn't, you could still be working on new photographs. But the idea was to have something completed by the end. And so I continued making photographs through that program. I can't remember what year I started making photographs in the park. I think it was 2021. Anyway, I have several years of photos made in the park. Did this program. It was awesome. I ended up making a book, or at least like a a mock-up of a book. It's called Woodwide. The name comes from the term Wood Wide Web, which if you aren't familiar, it's a nickname of the mushrooms that grow in like forests that connect all the trees.
I don't know if you've heard of this.
There's like a network of fungi that connects all the trees and they communicate to each other through this. It's like a very scientific name, like mycorrhizal fungus or something. And it's all underneath the forest floor, essentially. And it helps trees communicate. They share nutrients back and forth using this fungus.
Whoa.
And it's a cool thing. So, I kind of named the project because it's, these unseen connections that are happening. So yeah, I made a book and I finished that program in January and I have a finished book. I'm not sure what I'm doing with it yet.
Okay.
It's just a book I made for myself.
Yeah.
I had people at this place in LA called For All the Birds Trapped in Airports. They make books for people, like artist books. So they made it for me. It's a hardcover book. It's awesome. I should have brought one to at least show you guys. But we'll see what happens. The idea is that I'm shopping it around.
Perfect.
And we'll see. So
that's amazing.
I don't have anything to announce, but hopefully soon someone will want to make it.
Yeah.
That's what a feeling. Now, does it feel complete to you?
Mm. Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't answer that part of the question. No. Yes and no. So the photos I'm done with. Like I actually have tried going back to the park and making more photos there. And it just feels like the passion's gone. Mm. Like it's that part is done. But I have so many photos that the final book that I made could definitely morph and change. I think one thing that I learned with doing that program is every publisher works differently. Sometimes they want to see more photos. Sometimes they want to change your idea up a little bit, or at least work with you on making something that feels good for what they want to make as well.
Yeah.
So it's pretty open, but as far as making new work there, that chapter's closed.
That's done. Interesting.
Yeah.
What a feeling that is.
Yeah, that sounds an amazing program. Holy cow.
Yeah, definitely recommend for anyone interested in like bookmaking. You don't have to be local to New York. It is based in New York, but there were people from overseas. There was people from all over taking the program. I think they opened it up to like 12 students or something like that, 10 to 12 students
cool.
a year. Definitely recommend.
Do you just submit some work and then they kind of pick, or is it a thing you sign up for and wait to be selected? How does it work?
At least when I did it, it's a selection process. I don't know how many people apply every year.
Yeah.
I don't know how competitive it is, but you submit work, they look it over, and then
they get
back to you.
Interesting. I'll
yeah.
have to look that up.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I want to know, how do you stick to black and white?
The color shooter.
I have to convince myself to shoot black and white. I'm always happily rewarded and pleased when I do, but my first instinct is always to go for the portrait, whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. I'm actually glad you asked this because this was a pretty pivotal point for me. So I think I kind of mentioned earlier that I went to Chico, which if for those who are unfamiliar, it's called Chico Review. It's run by Charcoal Books. They do a week-long retreat up in Montana, Wyoming?
Yeah, one of them. Yeah.
Montana.
Yeah.
Somewhere up there. And you go and you meet and you share work. And it's like a critique with, every year they have different photographers, like Daniel Arnold or Curran Hadelberg, Brian Scutmott. I mean, it's so many different awesome people that go and you can kind of show your work to them and get feedback from them. So I went to Chico and I think I had mentioned that I brought pictures of my daughter and then also pictures of the park. I had brought two projects along to get feedback on. All the pictures that I brought of my daughter were in black and white because I had made that choice to shoot black and white for photos of her. And I'm showing, it was actually specifically Brian Scutmott. I'm like showing him work. I'm like super nervous. I'm sitting down and I'm like showing him work. And then I was like, these are all the park pictures. And he's like, oh, I'm really drawn to the family photos though, actually. And I was like, oh, that's, interesting. He's a black and white photographer primarily. And so I was like, I'm nervous showing him the work. And then I had a few photos of the park work that were in black and white. I was like, I have a few of them black and white. I'm not sure if I should lean into black and white or color for the park photos. I was like, but most of it's in color at this point. And so I feel like I'd be starting over shooting in black and white because I'm already so far. And he was like, just convert it. And I was what? Like, I was like, no way. Like, this is all like Portra, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, that's what I do. He's like, that's what I do. And I was like, what? He told me that like a lot of his 4x5 work, it, you know, it could be shot on black and white or color, but a lot of times he'll convert his Portra to black and white. He's like, then I have the option down the road.
I love that this is such like a film photography thing that we're like, we could never, but like digital, know, we have no problem converting to any sepia, whatever you want, black and white, doesn't matter. But if we shoot something on Portra 400 that we made, that we can, how could we, you know?
I know. I had such a mental block about it. And I was glad that you brought this up because like that was such a freeing moment for me. I was like, I'm allowed, like,
this person
that I look up to is like, they're doing it, so I can do it. It's okay. And so I'd say convert it, mess around, see what works. That also being said, I did kind of just make a decision like after that, and I converted a lot of the park work to black and white. Some of them didn't work, a lot of them did, and I was like, okay. And I had started shooting the 4x5 and 8x10 camera, and it's just obscenely expensive to shoot 8x10 color.
Yeah.
I think a box of 10 photos of Portra 8x10 is like $350.
Goodness.
So you're looking at $35 a photo.
That's like, wild.
When you break it down like that, geez.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you can get like really cheap like Foma pan for 8x10, and it's like $4 or $5 a shot.
Yeah.
So it's like way more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had made that decision once I started really shooting the large format camera. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do black and white. It'll allow me to process it at home easier. And I'll be able to take more photos, which I think is important, is like being able to like free myself of like that feeling of having only 10 photos. Like I can't do that.
Yeah. Right.
Especially coming from 35mm and street photography. Like there's a lot of times where I'd take like 10 photos of one
Of
a trash bag in the air or something.
Right,
you know,
right,
like I need to be able to like take photos and like really feel free.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just made the decision, but you know, convert it, mess around. It's,
I love it.
There's no rules.
Do you shoot color at all anymore? Is it something that you've just kind of X'd out?
2 years ago, I made the decision. I haven't really shot color.
Okay.
Yeah. That must be so. What stock are you using?
When I first switched, it was all HP5.
Mm-hmm.
I still like HP5, but I found that I like Tri-X better. And then once Tri-X recently went down in price, like last year sometime, it like kind of went down, and it was like about the same price as HP5. I was like, oh, well, that's what I'm doing. So for smaller formats, it's Tri-X. HP5 on large format, like 8x10, is still much cheaper. So if it's sheet film, it's HP5. If it's smaller formats, then it's Tri-X.
It's wild. Not to beat a dead horse, but it's wild how expensive film has gotten. And it's still going up. Like, it's not getting any cheaper anytime soon. So it's just crazy.
Well, and I don't think it's ever going to go back down.
No.
Unless, you know, it's dying again, like truly dying, then maybe it'll go back down before it's dead. But yeah, films, it's crazy. I mean, I was looking at, this was like a few months ago, but I was looking at these old orders I had placed.
I don't know if you guys remember.
My favorite film when I was shooting street color work was Lomo 800.
Yeah. Because
you could get a 3-pack for, I think it was like $18.
$18. Yeah. All day. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And
crazy.
I was looking back, I was like, holy cow, that's crazy. Now one roll of Portra is like $18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake. I was telling Timothy, I shot it this recent trip home to Connecticut. I texted him. I was like, I made a mistake. Those, you know, to get him to be like, oh my God, what? And I was like, I shot Portra 800. Oh, it's so good. And I want it all. That's all I want. And I went to Sammy's and was like, how much is Portra 800? And he was like, $18. Or maybe, I think that's what he said. $17. Yeah.
That's just insane to me. I don't know. There might be some listeners here that are like Poly B.
Mm-hmm.
They watch a lot of Poly B. But me and him are super close friends. We actually had a video, I think a few years ago. We were all talking. He was like asking how much is too much for film for you? Like when it hits what point are you done? And my answer was, if Portra 800 gets to $20 a roll, I'm switching to black and white. I ended up doing it before it hit $20 a roll, but I wasn't too far off.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just crazy to see how much it's changed.
I know. I was like, I'm returning something. So I have a little bit of money. I'm like, how many rolls could I get for this much money.
And not enough.
Like, no, it was like 35 rolls, like for a lot of money. I was like, that is not okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough.
I just always have I always love my black and white work more than I appreciate my color. When I look at my color, I'm like, it doesn't deserve to be shot on color. Like, I'm not doing anything that is representing like the cost and the work that goes into, because I always develop all my own film too. So like, I get so much more out of pulling a roll of like Tri-X out and looking at it. And I can already tell what the negative looks like when I pull it out of the tank, you know, because I've been shooting it for so long and just appreciating black and white. So I kind of shut myself off from loading color film in my main camera. You know, I still have my B camera. I usually shoot like CineStill 400D in it or something like that, just to allow myself, because there's times where that you need that color frame, you know, something is going on where it's so beautiful that you need that color shot. And as I've, our listeners are poor ears, I'm the guy that carries 15 cameras with me wherever I go, even if I'm going to work and I know I'm never going to pull a camera out of my bag. I'm still lugging them all, but it's just like, I'm glad I'm back. What I'm saying is it does. It really simplifies things. If you just tell yourself you're black and white. Like, that's it. Just do that. It makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. You don't get, like, decision paralysis. Like, should I, you know, which color stock?
It was killing me. For a full year, I was shooting only color, which was so weird for me because that was never a thing. And I'm just like, oh, I love portrait. I love this. And I'm, like, running around wasting all this money. And I'm even going back now, like, yeah, they're okay photos. But it's not anything that's, like, worth the cost that I'm putting into this. I want to put my money, if I'm going to invest it into this passion and hobby and love, I need to put it into things that are actually going to recoup what I'm trying to represent with the photo. It's just crazy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that, well, you got to just kind of do what works for you. Mm-hmm. This could be really wrong of me to say, but like, one of the mentalities that I've had is like, when I made that switch, I was like, okay, A, this sucks because I have all this color work and I feel like they can't live together, which I think is a total, you know, I disagree with it, but at the same time, there's a piece in the back of my mind that still feels that way.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something to be said for like having large chunks of work in a format and in a, you know, black and white or color or a certain film stock. I always find it interesting. You know, I have a lot of friends that are film photographers and some of them are like, oh yeah, just shoot whatever, like, expired film, or they're like jumping around to all these, like, you know, sometimes they'll do like the Lomo purple stuff, like all films I would never personally, I would not use, but because I want the consistency, there's something about it that I'm like, I need the consistency.
Right.
But yeah, everyone does their own thing and you got to just do what's right for you. I think looking back on the history of photos, and you know, I'm pretty big photo book nerd, like looking back at all these different photographers, like, they just did what worked for them and it, you know, they're not all the same. Yeah. So you just got to do what works for you.
Totally.
Really follow that. And that kind of like ties back into the beginning when we were talking about just making work that speaks to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. All things I need to hear right now.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with listener question for Dustin right after this message from our sponsor. Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop, we develop some film, we laugh, we just hang. It's really a good time. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show, guys. Thanks.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Mac Valdi, a.k.a. Marcus. And they ask, what advice would you give to someone doing their first photo workshop? This is an interesting question. Curious.
Yeah. You know, I think earlier I mentioned I had done the Chico review. I've also done a workshop with, I'm trying to think of all the different people. So I did the Chico review. I've done the LTP, which, you know, we did critiques with a bunch of different photographers and other people. I've done a workshop with Mark Steinmetz.
Wow, cool.
Several people. I would say the one common thing that I pulled from all of those different workshops and critiques is be open to criticism. Mm. I think there were pieces that I heard from some people in the critique part of like a workshop or whatever that in the moment didn't feel great, but were actually super, super helpful in the long run. Once you separate your like ego or whatever from hearing it. So I think really being open and like asking questions that don't just make you feel good or like validate your experience or validate what you're seeing, but like really try to get other people's perspectives and listen to them, because that's really how you're going to grow, is actually listening to the hard things. That being said, the flip side of that is also know when to throw away that criticism that doesn't work for you. There were instances, you know, not going to name any names, but like, especially at Chico, where you're meeting with a bunch of different photographers. There were two photographers in particular that I like really highly look up to. They're looking through the photos. One of them singled out this photo and they hated it or like really had problems with it. Wow. And the other person who I also really look up to loved it and it was their favorite photo.
Wow.
And that left me super confused. Right. I was like, what do I do with this? Like, these are two people I really look up to, and like one loved it, is their favorite. The other person said, this has got to go. And you, at the end of the day, it circles back to what we were talking about in the beginning of this podcast, is like, you got to listen to what works well for you.
Right.
What do you like about it? How do you justify it? Does it make sense to you? Asking yourself those why questions, why you took it. And if those answers all still resonate with you, it's something that works. But you do still need that criticism, and you need to be able to hear it, and you need to be able to like live with that criticism, because no one's going to like everything that you do. And sometimes it's good to just hear that and be able to exist after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think what you said too, to also be able to trust your own instincts too, I feel like.
Yeah. You have to trust yourself. It can't just be what other people want all the time. And if your favorite photographer hates your favorite photo, like that's a bummer, but you got to stand behind it. You got to know when to stand behind your work.
I love it.
You know, what's that saying? Like stand 10 toes down. Like you got to like know when to like really stand on business. And then you got to be able to be fluid and flexible too. And like, and understand when someone's making a point that like, you probably should listen to, you know, or like when you really think about it, it makes sense. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's probably right. Then, you know, be able to listen to that and not let your ego get in the way.
Dude, that takes so much courage to show your work to, because, you know, the don't ever meet your heroes type situation of they can totally crush you. And but it's true. It's so easy to send a, you know, a Dropbox link to a buddy that you know is going to hype you up because they're your buddy. And what you really need is the, hey, this, you know, these aren't working together. This is, you know, there's more, you need to find more to this than right. that. It's are tough things to say to somebody that is your friend. So it's, yeah, it's, I mean, I saw, I think it was Brian Burks, former guest on the show. He went to the Chico photo review, and it was like Todd Heido and Scoopmont and all of them. And it, the fear I would have, I mean, it's why I've never really looked into going, because I don't know. I don't want to know what they.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, showing your work to like people that you like really look up to. Todd Heido was there the year I went. I will say that specifically Todd Heido was like the sweetest man ever. I was so nervous, but he was like so kind. Everyone there was super nice, but it was interesting hearing different feedbacks come in from these
people. But also you have to think about like, this is how we can get better, right? If it's critiques, critiques for a reason, you know?
Yeah. So. And it's perspective, learning other people's perspectives and like what, like I said, you got to know when that thing and that perspective works for you and it might help you along the way. And you got to know when that perspective doesn't work for you.
Sure.
You know?
Or like, oh, I never thought to look at it that way, you know?
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I got some really great advice that things that I had not ever thought of just by like being perceptive and hearing it and asking questions and like not getting in the way of the process. So I would say, I think that, you know, the question was like, what advice would you give to someone doing a workshop? I would say just like really be open, be there to learn, be there, be ready, you know, be ready to like really take it on and listen and not let your ego get in the way.
Yeah, check your ego at the door.
Yeah.
Man, good question and answer there. That was great. Man, give them the tough ones. Give them the tough ones.
We have a tough. Okay. If you had to choose one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be and why? You're on a desert island. That's all you could take.
So is it like, do I get, is it, if it's a film camera, do I get to like,
it's a magical, like, it's a magical chemicals? Island. You have chemicals, you have a repair shop, you have all everything you could need.
We got it there.
I mean, this, this question is unfortunately so easy for me.
Good.
I have
Love
owned
that.
A Leica, different Leicas, but I have owned a Leica M body since 2008, I think.
Oh, when they were cheap?
Bought one, which by the way, by the way, I spent $1,100 on a mint M6 in 2008. I was looking back at my Craigslist emails about it actually the other day. I was like, that's crazy. I wish you could buy that now. It would be an MP probably, because that's what I've switched to. I, you know, quote unquote upgraded to an MP, and it'd be Tri-X and an MP, and I would be super happy. It's such an easy, I mean, it's just the camera I always come back to.
What lens do you have on there?
Oh, okay. Now I guess that's a little tricky. I think, you know, this is tough. This is a tough one. I think 2 years ago you asked me this, I would have said a 28 Summicron. I think that that answer is now a 35.
Ooh.
Summicron or Summilux, 35 millimeter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as I've gotten into other styles of photography, I'm interested more in like, I've been shooting with a 35, a 50. I actually bought a 90, been using that.
Damn, okay. Fun.
Yeah, it'd be a 35 though. I couldn't go too tight, so 35.
Great, great answer.
Love that.
We love the M.
Yeah.
We love the M.
I'm sure that's most people's answer, but that's, I mean, it's just, it's easy.
Too good. Okay, second part, is there any camera that you're lusting after right now? Any white whales, anything you're like scrolling your eBay, waiting to pull the trigger?
I think every photographer probably has these. There's a part of me that would be really interested in the, I know this is, might be blasphemous on this podcast, but the new Hasselblad digital media format X2D, or I don't know, whatever. I kind of want to try one of those. I think that that could be fun. I don't think I would, it could ever be like my main camera. So maybe my white whale. It would probably be an Ebony 8x10, which is, they don't make them anymore. They're like obscenely expensive, hard to repair because they don't make parts for it anymore. But I think because Alex Soth used that for a long time, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that I'd love to have one. I don't know if I'd really use it, but that's like, that's a white whale for sure.
Oh yeah.
That's beautiful. A great answer. Yeah.
God, I love cameras. They're so
Me
cool.
Me too.
They're so good. They're so much fun.
They are.
Okay. Well, Dustin, thank you. This has been phenomenal. I know we had some scheduling issues. I'm glad we made it work for today. This was just what we needed, and I'm sure our listeners will agree. But where can everybody check out your work? I know the book's not, the book's TBD, but like, share all the things.
My social media presence is primarily Instagram, and that is at Dustin Roderick. I have a street photography account as well, if you're interested in that, which is Regular Dustin, at Regular Dustin. And then my website is dustinroderick.com. It's not the place that I really post frequent work or really pay that much attention to, but maybe that'll change. I probably should change that. So yeah, primarily Instagram. I'm really open and receptive. I answer pretty much all my DMs always. So if you have any questions or whatever,
that's awesome.
Shoot me a message.
Great. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups, some old YouTube stuff that I was watching the other day, cringing at so hard.
Stop.
But you can go to youtube.com, go to the search bars, search Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of stuff there. TimothyMakeups.com. I've been saying it for 12 years. The update is coming. it's there. I think I just need to like polish off and, you know, hit upload or whatever it is you do on Squarespace. But TimothyMakeups.com. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
I'm Crispy Photo on all the things. Instagram, Threads, YouTube. We were Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Analog Talk Podcast on Threads. Dustin, thank you. This was so good.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm glad that you asked. And
Heck
thank
yeah.
you for everything.
Of course.
Got it. All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
First off, Chris and I would love to thank Dustin for coming on the show. Such a great conversation. We've been wanting to get you on forever. Glad we got it all worked out. And yeah, we just can't wait to see what the future holds with the book that you were talking about and just your photography in general. You're killing it, man. So good. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon develop and hang over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, again, patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon's the best way to support the show. For all the patrons that already support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. Promise. But yeah, that's gonna wrap it up. We're back. How cool is that? We're excited, stoked to roll out some new episodes for you guys. We're just glad to be back doing it. We love talking about this stuff. It's our lives. But yeah, we'll see you guys soon with some new episodes. All right, later.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.